Let's go back in time to 1932 as Converse brings you historic footage of the legendary original Celtics with whom all great professional teams are compared.
We have now taken over your radio.
Richie Guerin is about to show you the most important step in getting past a man. It's the first one.
And Oscar will inbound it. The men in green, the Milwaukee Bucks, that's Al Cinder against Bellamy.
It has Jordan. Allen shakes free. Gets two!
Gilmore on
a big stop! Oh,
brother! Lead Toledo Artists. You get 21.
4:28 to go in the first quarter for the Cal Palace. Here's Barry.
Jordan. Open. Chicago with the lead!
Hello, and welcome back to the Over and Back Classic NBA Podcast. I am Jason Mann, and with me as usual is Rich Craich. Rich, we've got some debating to do.
Yeah, we do. We do. This is you have a running count going. How many podcasts have we had so far in this series? We have close to 40, right?
Yeah, I think it's going to end up being 37 in all.
Nice. That's
yeah. So of the top 50 episodes going through, you know, including individual player episodes, including our first shows with Curtis Harris, where we looked at the initial top 50, and then this episode we'll have one more after this where we finally reveal our top 50. But this one's gonna go ahead.
This will be our last one because we're going to get in such heated arguments that I think we're going to have to disband the podcast. So it's been a good run, Jason. I appreciate it. And I'd like to thank Hardwood Proxism for allowing us to do this. But after tonight, it's all over. So I don't even know if we're going to get to that top 50. I don't.
Yeah.
We're going to be so angry and so adamant at our like number 47 and 48 guys that we're not going to let it down. And it's just going to be all
it's
over.
It's going to be sad. It's, you know, we had so much,
it's bittersweet.
We had so much promise to begin this. And now it's just, you know, it's just all falling apart. So I'm very sad now.
Well, you know what?
Yeah. Well, let's actually have discussion and then we can fight a little bit later. So,
okay. All right.
Fine. So, yeah, basically, we agree on 43-ish players right now. We say, yes, these guys are in, and we won't reveal them now. We'll reveal them on our next episode. But we have slightly 7 slots open, and we have 15 players that one of us or, you know, feels should be in or maybe should be in. So, so we're just going to kind of just, you know, go through what we think about them, you know, against them, what have you. So, the first guy that we have listed here is good old Bob Cousy, who's one, of course, you know, the early pioneers of basketball, you know, probably the most famous player of his day. I mean, you remember when we were kind of talking about it was one of our Game 7 episodes where, you know, it was like this highlight reel that was just completely focused on Cousy to the exclusion of anybody else in the game, any other the Celtics. And this was, you know, in the early 60s, you know, when they were, of course, you know, had established themselves as the premier team in the NBA. But it was all about Cousy. You know, he was an MVP, a 10-time All-NBA first team. Lots, you know, very strong, I think, fame argument. One of the 4 players named the 25th, 35th, and 50th anniversary teams. And, you know, I found an SI article from 56 that quotes as saying, "There's absolute agreement that since the retirement of George Mikan, Cousy, as pro basketball's greatest attraction, has almost single-handedly been carrying the league to a prosperity it could never otherwise enjoy." Now, you know, fame, that's a nebulous thing. But we, you know, we've talked about fame and influence being important. You know,
sure.
He's obviously like one of, you know, I think he's just such a premier guy on that level that I think it overcomes the fact that some of the numbers don't look as great for him as they might for a guy that has his reputation.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing I have with Cousy here. And you know, initially I left him off my master, you know, top 50 list or whatever. But I told you he's a guy that I can easily sort of be convinced. But I thought he was worth, you know, at least another argument or a discussion or whatever. Because when we did our first podcast, I believe with Curtis, we talked about Cousy. And it was kind of a revelation to me, at least, that he was so – that the numbers just weren't there for him. And that's unfortunately something we have to do with this as well is discuss influence. There's going to be guys coming up here as well who maybe – don't have the number argument, but have the influence argument. And that's where you kind of have to go with Cousy. And You know, real quickly though, I did want to go over his numbers a little bit because I think it is interesting to at least talk about on that, you know, on that level.
Sure.
And you know, I don't like doing a, and if you follow this entire series, we know you know we're not big on like all time numbers. Like, where does Bob Cousy rank among all time guards? Or, like, for me, that's you just can't really do that fairly because what Bob Cousy was asked to do in his era is not what, you know, John Wall is asked to do in his, like, it's night and day between those two guys. So I don't like necessarily, you know, discussing those on the same level. But when you look at Cousy, even in his era, the stats are just not very good for him. And you know, he had some things that were, you know, on quite good, you know, into a value over replacement player. I know he ranks out pretty well. Win shares per 48, he ranks out pretty well amongst guards, you know, pre-1980s with a ton of minutes, 15,000 minutes here. He's, you know, eighth in win shares per 48, seventh in win shares. He gets a little worse, though, if you look at guards with 200 games. So basically what I did is just looked at guards with over 200 games. And, you know, of course, that could be small, and that could be, you know, a few little blip seasons from people here and there. But I just kind of wanted to get an idea of how much that changes in terms of, you know, guys who are around forever and guys who are just, you know, around for a few years or had a decent run. And he does, you know, not very well in that. He's, you know, he's ninth out of 13 in win shares per 48, and then he's fifth out of five in terms of win shares. And this is a win share 0.130 win shares per 48, and then win shares over 90 as well. So, sure. You know, you look at a guy and he's on the bottom of or near the bottom of both of those, and you look, okay, that, you know, it is what it is. The shooting is something that really, and this is where I think I'll at least let down a little bit, is that I understand that wasn't part of what he was, you know, asked to do, and that's not a part of the thing. You know, we're talking about a completely different era, but he's really, really bad shooter. And even in his era, you know, he's 53rd in effective field goal percentage amongst guards in his era, which is just like, it's almost kind of shocking for when you think about it. You're like, geez, that's really historically bad. And then, like I said, I don't like looking at, you know, or comparing guys across eras or whatever, but I thought this was interesting that Bob Cousy is 647th all time amongst guards in effective field goal percentage. So like he's one of the, like, amongst guards, he's you know, you could argue that he's one of the worst shooting guards ever. And that's like,
you mean one of the worst guards who at shooting, I guess.
Yes, yeah, so, sorry, I shouldn't say shooting guards. Right. Yeah, one of the worst shooting,
yes,
guards.
Yeah.
All time. Need to add some more.
And obviously
there.
A lot of that, yeah, has to do with the style of play at the time.
Oh,
where,
sure,
you know, yeah, just they, you know, of course the style of play changed a lot when he was playing too. I mean, you know, he played several years before the shot clock was even there, and then he kind of played this up tempo thing, and you know, the shooting percentages, I think, from the most part, stay kind of consistent for him. So yeah, I mean, I see what you're saying. I mean, you're, you know, I did a search, and you kind of played off that of, you know, pre-1980 guards with 15,000 or more career minutes. And the reason I picked pre-1980 is, you know, because the three-point line, I think, changes things a bit.
Oh,
and certainly. And certainly, you know, there's a lot of difference between the game in 1950, 1980, even in rules. So, you know, it's not like the best comparison ever. But, you know, looking at, there are 29 guys that qualify on this list. And that was a above 0.100 win shares per 48. So, you know, I guess above average or what have you, you know, where you start to kind of be considered like, oh, okay, you're all right. And, you know, he was eighth in win shares per 48 in that list and seventh in win shares total. So, I don't know, when you say 200 games, like, do you have a reasoning why, like, 200 games is where you picked, like, a baseline?
No, it was just, yeah, no, to be fair, I didn't really pick, like, for no reason, really. I mean, we've done doing 100 games for this just to sort of get guys, you know, especially when we're doing all-time guys, just because it sort of weeds them out,
sure,
you know, guys that have, you know, fluky, you know, 1 years or whatever. But then, yeah, with 200 games, I thought, you know, add a few more years into there, you know, realistically, you know, two and a half, three, you know, somewhere around there. So, no, there wasn't any, like, you know, stout reasoning on why I did exactly 200. So that was just sort of kind of picked up.
Yeah, I feel like if you're talking about guards with careers that are of a similar length to his or you know, are a significant enough length where you'd consider them,
sure,
for this kind of list. I mean, I think he now, you know, he doesn't compare to, you know, Oscar Robertson or Jerry West. Those guys are just clearly head and shoulders above, you know, pretty much anybody else here. You know, Walt Frazier. You know, Bill Sharman and Sam Jones are strong as well. The minutes for them aren't quite as much, but, you know, but clearly, like, Jerry and Oscar are, like, leagues above, you know, most of the rest of these guys. And then, you know, I think Cousy's kind of right in that next tier. And, you know, there's some other guys who, you know, kind of have least similar numerical cases like Calvin Murphy, Larry Costello, who, you know, even Tony Archibald, who made the original top 50, but, you know, was kind of cut off from ours. Yeah. And those guys I wouldn't really consider at Kuzi's level. So, you know, it is tough. I mean, some of the things that I think strengthen for him is that, you know, he and Oscar Robertson were the only two guards to be named MVP before 1987. So, you know, in 30 years in the league, those were the only two guys who were considered good enough to be MVP. And, you know, his ball handling was just incredible for the time. He helped pioneer no-look passes and behind-the-back dribbles. He wasn't the only guy who was doing that, like Bob Davies. And, you know, some other guys, you know, were you know, did some innovative ball handling stuff, but he definitely was important in that.
He certainly got a lot of the credit of really popularizing it and taking it to the, you know, a next level, elite level at that point.
And, you know, he was a great passer. He led the league in assists for 8 straight seasons. We don't have anything like his assist percentage to kind of, you know, be able to have some better context, but that's, you know, that's still impressive. Other than John Stockton, no one else has ever done that. He was credited as, you know, basically the engine that made the Celtics offense go. Auerbach called him as important on offense as Russell was on defense. Now that's probably overstating things, but, you know, it gives you kind of a sense of what he was thought of as. So,
sure.
I think he just needs to be on there, and I completely agree with, or I completely see the case that, okay, you know, there's some things to look at. Like, even considering, you know, the standards of his time, the shooting was really bad, and that's, you know, that's obviously a problem, but I think he did enough of the other stuff you know, incredible amount of team success. I think he won,
sure,
you know, they won, I believe, 6 championships with him or somewhere around there, you know, with him out of their 11 that they won. So, you know, he was an important player. He was an influential player. So I would argue he was, I think of the guys that we have listed, I think he was my, like, I kind of prioritized them, and I think he was, like, the number one guy that I would pick out of this list.
Yeah, and I will allow this to relent. I mostly wanted to discuss Kuzi on a little bit more of a level, but he's a guy, and we're going to talk about another guy, you know, a little bit later. He's one that, you know, the more you think, you just cannot have a top 50 list without Bob Cousy, you know, in terms of influence, because we said that's going to be something that we're going to talk about, influence, you know, impact on the game, that sort of stuff, you know, popularity, celebrity status, you know, transcendent, you know, name is something we're going to factor in here, you know, next to just statistics. And when you look at that, stats-wise, I mean, I'm sort of putting down some of the stuff he did, but when you look at it by and large, he was very good at the things he was very good at. You know what I mean? Like, the things you could tell he focused on in terms of assists and that sort of, he was spectacular at. It's just the shooting wasn't there, and that sort of stuff wasn't there. And, you know, some of the other stuff wasn't quite there. But when you talk about, I don't even think we necessarily need the stats, because I think his influence on the game, whether, you know, people didn't, it doesn't matter what it was. I mean, his influence, his legend status, his celebrity of the game, you know, it'd be really ridiculous to have a top 50 list without him. So I will allow that to relent. I mostly just want to talk about it a little bit, because I thought he's an interesting one that I think more people maybe should take a look at and go, oh, geez, like, you know, more of my argument maybe is that maybe people put him on a little bit higher of a pedestal than he deserves, but he absolutely deserves to be a top 50 player of all time. And that to me, I am perfectly okay with removing somebody from my list and adding him back on there. So
yeah,
I'm okay with that.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. And I think that's reasonable. So next we are going to talk about Isaiah Thomas, who I think should be on here. You do not have him on your list. And he is, just go through the sort of the advance, which is kind of the weakness in his case. He's 138th in win shares. He's not in the top 250 in win shares for 48. 101st in box plus plus minus, 58th in value over replacement player. So that's kind of the only one where he's even in the top 50 league. You know, so another guy where the shooting hurts him, he, you know, was, you know, he was actually a good scorer and a good assist, you know, good passer for his position. You know, he was one of the best scoring point guard probably ever, really, and certainly of his time. But I don't know, the advanced stats are rough on him. But I do think, like, you know, for me, he's a definitely guy where, like, watching him play, I'm not saying that necessarily makes him seem better than he was, but it makes him seem better than, the stats would indicate.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. When you watch highlights or if you watch live games with Isaiah, he seems like a much more important. He seems like a much better. He just seems like the advanced. I mean, that's what shocked me about him, and that's a guy why I sort of put him on this list of guys that I might not vote for, because you know when we did the show about him or we discussed him, it was just shocking at how low he was in terms of those advanced stats. And the shooting is really, really bad. I mean, that really, really gets it. And it's also the high usage percentage as well. I mean, he was just doing a lot of stuff with the ball and wasn't particularly, you know, finishing or at a decent rate, despite taking up a lot of the possessions or whatever, which, you know, and now that's something we sort of value a little bit more than we did in Isaiah's time and that sort of stuff. But it's, to me, the thing that most got me with him is that it wasn't like, you know, that he was just out of the top 50 with some of those, which is fine if you're going to be that. I mean, like the value replacement player 58, that, you know, if you're going to be that coupled with, you know, a guy that, you know, from the look and the feel and the eye test is a guy who, yeah, no, he's an all-time legendary player or whatever. But then you look at the win shares for 48 and he's not in the top 250 and, you know, the win shares total, he's 138. You know, there's just stuff there and he's just not even close to that. And it's, you know, I look at other guys that we have on this list and I go, yeah, you know, Isaiah from, you know, a standpoint of if I walked to some guy in the street and said, hey, is Isaiah Thomas a top 50 player? A lot of people are going to say, yeah. But I mean, when we look at this and I think, you know, doing our due diligence and research and looking at more guys, it's hard to really make a case at Isaiah because there's just so many other guys I think that are just as deserving or, you know, more deserving than Isaiah. So he's a tough one. I mean, from a initial standpoint, if we had started this list before, I would have said absolutely no doubt, you know, not doing any of the research, not looking at other guys and not, you know, going through the careers and the lives of other guys and looking at their stats and looking at what they did or whatever. But, you know, as I've done this, I've kind of looked at Isaiah and go, yeah, I don't know. Like he's going to be a tough one for me. I just don't see it in terms of the advanced stats. I just don't see it in terms of some of the raw stats. And, you know, other than just being a guy who took up a lot of his possessions, a guy who had a lot of success and a guy who we sort of think, you know, is a top player. I don't know. He's going to be a very interesting one as we get down the line here.
Yeah. You know, he had like a 5-year stretch from like 83 to like 87 where like he really was, you know, production wise was a premier player. I mean, he was a 21-10 guy for those things. Led set the assist record in league history, which was later broken in 85 with 13.9 in a season. So, was able to, you know, kind of take that role, you know, soak up a lot of possessions at a high usage rate, you know, and even had one later on. But, you know, as his individual numbers kind of slid, the team success increased. And, you know, I don't think it's just that's what caused it, but there was that correlation and they became more of a balanced team. But, you know, to me, he was an incredible, like just like a really great bad shot maker. Like he could just take, just the degree of difficulty in the shots that he could take was like really awesome. And, you know, soaking up those possessions, like, I don't know if the Pistons really had like a lot of other, really any other like great shot creators. You know, obviously they had Vinnie Johnson off the bench and Dumars to a degree, but I don't think Bill Laimbeer was creating his own shot that much. You know, I mean, they had a lot of guys who could kind of rebound and, you know, and do their own thing. And, you know, I guess Dantley, obviously, for a while. But I don't know. There's not really a great way to explain it, I don't think, at least in the numbers. But I don't know. Another thing for me is that, you know, the bad boy Pistons, I mean, other than him, they are not on, you know, no one else is on the top 50. And you have teams like the, you know, the early 70s Knicks and, you know, I'm sure there are others that, you know, have had, you know, the Pistons had just as much success as those teams, yet, you know, the Knicks had like 4 guys in this list. And I just think taking Isaiah off this list it'd be kind of a disservice to that bad boys Pistons teams, even though, you know, they had a lot of other good players. They were a well-balanced team. Like, it's hard for me to justify numbers wise. I mean, I don't think Isaiah Thomas has nearly as strong of a case as, you know, as Clyde Frazier, but I do think, I don't know. I think the skills that he had, I mean, the ball handling that he had, like I said, the incredible, you know, shot ability he had, you know, the shot creation at his size. I do think that those things, you know, were things that, you know, made him pretty great. And I think they form an argument, although, you know, the lack of numbers, you know, even again, you know, if you're comparing, it's one thing to compare it all time, but when you're comparing it to guys who were in, you know, his era, and he doesn't even necessarily stand out that well. You just kind of wonder about that.
Yeah. Yeah. He's, I don't know. What do we do here? Do we put him on the back burner and discuss him a little bit later? Yeah. I don't know if I'm ready to come to a consensus on him.
Let's go through some of the other guards and kind of say like where we would put him, if we would kind of put him ahead or behind those guys. I think that's might be worth a discussion.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I kind of grouped them together for position or role just to kind of have that ability to do sort of off the top of our head if we wanted to. So next we have Allen Iverson, who we talked about fairly recently on the show. I have him as a maybe. You have him as a yes. You know, he is 83rd all time in win shares, 210th in win shares per 48, 78th in box score plus minus, and 39th in value over replacement player. You know, he has some really strong, just incredible scoring seasons, incredible usage, you know, incredible number of minutes. I mean, he took on a heavy burden for his teams, as we talked about before, and, you know, did pretty well, obviously. I mean, despite, you know, lack of size, despite, you know, the issues that he had. But yeah, I think for you, it's more of a, you know, of a significance type thing that kind of
sure. Yeah. And like sort of a real answer with Kuzi there, you look at a guy in terms of influence and that sort of stuff. And it's not to say that Iverson doesn't have some of the numbers as well, because I think he has a fair amount. And I think the hardware too is impressive for Iverson as well. You know, the one MVP, three all NBA first teams, you know, three all NBA second teams, one all, you know, all NBA third team. I mean, for his era, I mean, that's a guy who was, I mean, arguably the best player and at least in his point, you know, at his time, you know, was the face of the NBA. And I think that's, it's an important thing to sort of think about as well in terms of a guy who was really that top star for the NBA in a period. And it's again, it's a for better or for worse period, because of course it's looked at as sort of a dark age of the NBA in a lot of ways, where, you know, and that's, you know, I'm not necessarily of that mind, but there's a lot of people, I mean, that's an era that a lot of people sort of, you know, have a lot of dumb narratives about in terms of like the players, you know, dress like and how they play and how they act and all that sort of crap that has thankfully kind of gone away a little bit. And it, you know, it's not fair for the era in general, but, you know, he was the face of that era. I mean, he was the guy, he was, you know, that sort of influential figure and that all-time legend of that early 2000s NBA. And you know, the hardware and the MVP and all that stuff sort of kind of proves that. So for me, he's an interesting one where, you know, the numbers are solid. You know, sixth in win shares, you know, 42nd in win shares per 48, fifth in value over replacement player, you know, amongst his era. Some of the overall stuff doesn't really shine all that much, as we mentioned, you know, 83rd only in win shares, 210 in win shares per 48. The longevity isn't quite there because he kind of fell off. But he's a guy, again, where I sort of, I don't know. It's similar to Kuzi where, you know, In not with the overwhelming numbers, but a guy who just seems like such an influential, legendary figure in the game, and a guy who for whatever it was, you know, a 3 or 4 year period was the man, or you can even stretch it to 5 years, was just one of the best players in the league and arguably the best player in the league. So it's hard. Yeah. And I, you know, I wouldn't argue that he was the best player in the league. I think I would probably take, you know, Duncan, Shaq and all that sort of stuff. But, you know, you look at the hardware, you look at how, you know, people perceived him. He was at that level. You know, we talked about a guy like Kuzi where a lot of the focus was on him. I mean, Allen Iverson in that, you know, NBA finals, the focus wasn't on, you know, Kobe and Shaq trying to win their, you know, second, you know, NBA final in a row. It was, oh my God, Allen Iverson's taking this team on his back and trying to do something with them. So yeah, he's an interesting one. He's one that I could definitely be argued down from, but I just think from an influence standpoint and a legend standpoint that he probably should be on this list because he has the numbers to at least help out with that case. But I think influence and legend is an overwhelming case for Iverson.
Yeah. Going back to Isaiah, one thing I didn't mention for him is he had three all NBA first teams. So the same number as Iverson. He had two second teams. Iverson had another second team and a third team. But you know, that's close. That's a decently close to kind of a similar number.
Sure.
I kind of listed some of the all time, the other, rankings. There's, we've been talking about the Bill Simmons pyramid ranking, the Slam Magazine top 500. But also, hoopscritic.com did a nice series over the summer, their hot 50, you know, where they had some really interesting people, you know, kind of rank, some of the players. And I thought it would kind of interesting to kind of compare that for Isaiah. Simmons had him 23rd, Slam had him 19, and Hoops Critic had him 21. For Iverson, Simmons had him 37, Slam had him 40th, and Hoops Critic had him 38. So, you know, those are all similar in mind for, you know, where these guys kind of rate. Would you put Isaiah above Iverson?
Yeah, and this was actually the toughest one that I had. These two, I mean, because I think their cases are actually, you know, shockingly similar, and I think, you know, the all-NBA first teams and a lot of the other stuff we talk about, you look at, they were the two that I was sort of, I was on the fence about both of them, because I think, you know, I think Isaiah, and, you know, I just argued him this last time, but I think he's you know, obviously a very good candidate. Iverson, I think, is a very good candidate as well. I put Iverson above him just based on the influence stuff, but in terms of, like, strip that out and just talk about player to player, I would take Isaiah over Iverson. So if you know, if that's how we're going to, you know, I would allow that, you know, because I have Iverson right now. But, you know, if we wanted to say, hey, let's, you know, let's not put too much stock in influence and all that sort of stuff. Or maybe you can argue that, well, he wasn't really all that influential. If you want to do that, I would absolutely, on a pure basketball level, put Isaiah in before I would put Iverson in. But I sort of calculate a lot of that influence and fame and stuff when I made this list as well. So that's why I put Iverson over him. But yeah, I can make, from a basketball argument standpoint, I would probably put Isaiah over him. So
yeah,
I don't know if that helps or hurts, you know, us, you know, making this list. Yeah. But that's, they were two that I really was looking at for a long time and trying to decide of, okay, you know, one or the other, because I thought their cases were very, very similar.
Right. And both were the kind of guys who could carry their team on their back in certain situations.
Oh, certainly.
I get the sense that Isaiah probably made his teammates better a little more than Iverson did. Not Iverson's really distributed the ball just because he had the ball so much. So he had those assist numbers. But he did maybe make his teammates better from the respect of just absorbing so much of just taking so much of the burden, especially in offense, really on offense, that, you know, I guess that helped his teammates in a certain sense. But I get the sense, you know, he didn't necessarily like share the ball as much as Isaiah did. So, that's a tough one for me. I mean, I think I would kind of lean toward Isaiah. You know, the thing with Iverson's influence, and I do think it's important. I think he's, you know, a culturally relevant guy and changed the shape of the league and all that. But he didn't do much for the popularity of the league. I mean, as you mentioned, right, like the for basically the prime of his career, the popularity of the league was on a downslope. I don't blame him for that, you know, or really, I don't know if he necessarily had much to do with that. So, you know, but that influence, like, was more, like, it wasn't quite widespread. It was more like he was really, like, within a niche. I mean, yeah, bigger than a niche, but, like, it was more like a subgroup of fans. It wasn't necessarily, like, the NBA fandom in general. So, I don't know. That's a tough one.
I'll highlight those and go.
Yeah,
maybe I'll relent. I'll see. But
those
are two. I mean, they were close ones. Yeah, they're going to be ones. They're down to the wire ones. If I'm with you on the influence thing, I think there is something to be said for that, you know, a positive, negative influence and what we should think about that. As I said, and maybe, you know, I'd be willing to drop that, is if we looked at it from a pure basketball sense of look at, okay, you know, in terms of team success, you know, Iverson had less than Isaiah. In terms of, you know, all-time greatness, you know, you'd probably put Isaiah over there. And in terms of being a straight basketball player, you'd probably put Isaiah over there. I think Iverson's an important part of NBA history in a sense, but I think Isaiah is as well. So if you're willing to do it, or I'm willing to take Iverson out and put Isaiah.
Okay. Well, maybe we'd be able to include them both, depending on how we feel about everybody else. So
let's see. But if it's between those two, I would allow that.
Okay.
So.
All right. Well, I appreciate that. So next we are talking about Manu Ginobili. I don't think you're on the Ginobili show, so you didn't really get a chance much to talk about him.
No, I didn't.
But I'm leaning no. You are leaning yes. You know, the efficiency is, and you know, the per minute stats are really awesome. I mean, he's 20th all time in win shares per 48. He had five top 10 seasons in win shares per 48. He's 13th in box score plus minus, 41st in value over replacement player, 86th in win shares overall, which is still really good. Obviously he was limited somewhat by injuries and by just having a, you know, just by minute restrictions throughout his career, which probably helped boost his ability, but you know, make him obviously less relied upon than other players. It's kind of my leaning against putting him on this list. I certainly think he's a candidate. Obviously, it was the reason we did a show on him, but for me, I don't think he. I think he's just behind like some of the other guys on this list. Is all that it is.
I think one of the guys, and I don't know if you guys mentioned it on the podcast, you guys did, and I know we mentioned it a little bit when we talked about Sam Jones a long time ago, but those two kind of, they're very similar to me in that sense, where you get guys that weren't necessarily the franchise player on the teams that had a lot of success or whatever, but you look at, you know, when they were in there, when they played minutes, I mean, they're crazy, crazy efficiency, him and Sam Jones. What's your status on Sam Jones, maybe, before we get into a little bit more of Manu?
Yeah, I mean, Sam Jones is yes to me, and I agree that they're similar. I think the thing that boosts for me is that Jones is, I mean, just the Celtics were a more accomplished team than the Spurs. I mean, the Spurs are a great team, obviously, a fantastic team. But Jones was on, you know, 10 of those 11 championship teams, and you know, was a really pivotal role on the back end of, you know, of those championships. And, you know, they do have similar numbers in terms of, like, you know, they were more stronger per minute than overall. But Jones still had five seasons where he was in the top 10 in win shares.
And so did Manu.
Well, no, Manu's were win shares. Jones was overall win share. So I think he was still producing at a high level in term, you know, of overall value, not just per minute value. I mean, he was doing both. And Manu was doing both too, but obviously to a lesser extent.
Yeah. And it's definitely a.
I guess I think Jones was just a more impactful player for his era. Although, you know, Manu is, you know, we talked about.
I mean, you look at value over replacement player and win shares per 40. I mean, Manu, he's fifth. You know, Chris Paul, Kobe Bryant, Dwayne Wade, and Jason Kidd, who are all
that's true.
No doubt shoo-ins. And then third in win shares per 48, which is Chris Paul and James Harden of his era. I mean, that's pretty good company.
That's pretty good.
And that's where I just can't, and again, and that could be an efficiency thing versus an overall thing. And sort of how do we rank that amongst, you know, a top 50? Do we value that as much? Cause yeah, longevity in terms of, you know, how much he's in the game, you know, how much he's doing as sort of a great sixth man and all that sort of stuff. But I value a lot of what you do when you're in the game. And it's not a guy who I think wasn't in the game for any reason related to his, you know, what he could accomplish. I think he was in the game a lot of ways to sort of as a strategic piece of being a six man or being a guy that would sort of have, you know, consistent minutes at certain points and, you know, sit out for long periods and then come back, you know, at the fourth quarter and be a big part of, you know, the closing out the game or whatever. So I don't know. I mean, when you look at a lot of this stuff, I mean, the arguments for him, I mean, a lot of it is, you know, that the value replacement player, he's fantastic. I mentioned he's top five in his era, third in his era, win shares per 48. You mentioned this little stuff about Sam Jones, you know, all time, you know, man, you know, five times in the top 10 for win shares per 48, four times in the top 10 value replacement player in his era, you know, 20th in win shares per 48 all time, 13th in box score plus minus all time, you know, 41st in value replacement player all time. So we talk about a guy who, yeah, he wasn't, you know, in all the time and wasn't playing to accumulate a lot of the other minutes. But as a guy who, when he was in, was just crazy efficient, it was a part of, you know, three championship teams in an era where, you know, yeah, it's cool that Sam Jones, you know, was 10 of 11, but I tend to think it's a little bit tougher to win a championship now than it was, you know, in that era.
Yeah,
so.
I mean, it is, but I do think we have to sort of, like, consider the accomplishment in its own era. I mean, you know, obviously Sam Jones didn't play I don't know. I mean, yeah, I agree that obviously the Celtics would not have won all those championships in a row if they'd played under the same conditions that Ginobili played in. The difference, you know, Sam Jones had three, was on the second team All NBA three times. So similar to what Manu's two appearances on the third team. I mean, that's, yeah, you know, you know, yeah, I would lean towards Sam Jones, still a little bit ahead of Manu. It's obviously a close argument. I do think that, you know, but both kind of had similar roles and were in similar context with, you know, being this with this group of great players and, you know, making them better. Sam Jones had a, you know, did have a, you know, he had a clutch shot reputation, which, you know, Manu, I'm sure there are clutch shots he's hit. He doesn't, that's not quite the same that he has. Either there's that for Sam Jones as well. It's not a negative for Manu, is more of just a strong positive for Sam Jones. I don't know. I think it's, you know, it's close. It's real close. I would lean towards Sam Jones ahead of Manu, but, you know, I could consider Manu for that. I just kind of feel like he's, you know, I for me, he's beneath Iverson. He's beneath Isaiah.
Okay.
But, you know, I could be talked into it, you know.
We'll highlight him. We'll go back to him.
All right. So next we got Ray Allen, and I have him as no, you have him as yes. And he's 28th all time in win shares, 92nd in win shares for 48, 64th in block shot plus minus, and 25th in value over replacement player. You know, he's obviously he was a very good leading scorer and just a terrific 3-point shooter, you know, probably the greatest volume 3-point shooter ever. You know, the negatives for me, I just think, like, of all the guards that we have listed, he's kind of, I think he's even been below Manu for me, and he might even be below Reggie Miller for me, which I've kind of gone back and forth on, but I just kind of feel like Reggie, like, had, like, a better track record in big moments. Not that Ray Allen didn't, and obviously he hit the great Miami Heat, you know, the 2013 finals shot that led them to win game six and eventually win the championship, one of the great clutch shots in history. But I think Reggie Miller would just had like all these times where like you could give him the ball and he could go and hit you that thing. And Allen, I just feel like didn't excel in that role in the same way.
Yeah, he's an interesting one for me. I have him on my initial list, and he's a guy who I've sort of, I take him on and I take him off almost on a daily basis, and it can sort of waver with him. Is, you know, I look at a guy who, as you said, is the greatest volume 3-point shooter of all time. I mean, that is pretty well there. I mean, he's historic for that. But then you look at some of the stuff, and, you know, I don't know if he's necessarily the best 3-point shooter ever. He's just a guy who hit the most. You know what I, he's an interesting one. I'm not going to argue too strongly on him. I think I can sort of be wavered on him a little bit. But he's one that I think there's some historic value to him, you know, being as good of a 3-point shooter as he was. But it was done pretty quietly, where a lot of these other guards that we've talked about, I think, have done it a little bit more, you know, loudly. And Reggie Miller, of course, is one. I think he has a better case than Reggie Miller, but it's an interesting case regardless. I won't argue to death about Ray Allen, but he's one that I think, you know, initially I put on my list, but there's a lot of times where I kind of waver, and I don't know if I'll be too ardent on him. I think I could possibly move off of him, you know, if we get some other guys we talk about here.
Well, so this is a little out of order, but let's go to Reggie Miller next, because I kind of want to look at that comparison. Where is it that you think that Allen exceeds Miller? Because all the advanced stats, Miller is stronger. He's ahead in win shares for 48, box score plus minus, and value replacement player. He's ahead in all those things. He has more All NBA appearances. I take that back. Well, he has three, but they're all in the third team. Allen had one in the second team, one in the third. He had more seasons in the top 10 and win shares for 48. You know, I mean, I'm not saying that there aren't other reasons to say that Allen could be ahead of Reggie. You know, Seth Partnow, you know, we talked about it, where he kind of felt like Allen was a better defender and just, you know, was more versatile, where, you know, Reggie was really just, you know, he was coming around and, you know, coming off screens and shooting threes, which, you know, obviously did that at an incredible high volume, but, you know, his game is more limited, I guess.
Yeah, and I think one of the other things too is Allen and his, you know, his era of guards or whatever definitely stands out amongst them a little bit more than I think Reggie does. And you know, that's not a criticism of Reggie, because of course he played in an era where you know, there was a few other decent guards running around or whatever. Yeah. Allen, you know, he's second in win shares amongst guards in his era. He's third in value replacement player. Like he's right up there. Whereas, you know, Reggie, you look at some of the stuff, you know, he's eighth in win shares per 48 amongst guards in his era and stuff. And there's just weird little things here and there that I just don't know about. I mean, I think the defense is definitely an important thing too, because I think Ray Allen is a far better defender than Reggie, who I don't think is very good at all. I think that Ray Allen did more in his era than Reggie did amongst his, and I guess I don't know. Yeah, and that's tough, because again, you know, you sort of weigh, how do you rank all time? Because I think, you know, you look at our all time guard, and if you put these two in neutral era things, you probably would go with Reggie. But when you look at, you know, sort of how they rose above their competition, you know, Ray Allen stands out. But then you could sort of argue, hey, was it a downtime for, you know, shooting guards, or a downtime for guards or whatever? And, you know, Miller was in an era where there were a ton of other good guards. I don't know. They're very close to me. I think a lot of the stuff of Ray Allen's, you know, a lot of the rate stat stuff for him helps me out, and the historic stuff of being, you know, the all-time leader in threes made, or, you know, threes attempted, all that sort of stuff. I mean, there's some value there for him as well, of being just, you know, far and away what we consider the best, you know, volume 3-point shooter ever, where Miller, you know, was very, very good at it, and, you know, a historic all-time great at it. But, you know, Ray Allen at least topped him in some of those numbers and sort of some of that stuff. But no, they're very similar cases, and yeah, they're a tough one. They're tough.
So I would think that probably if you consider his entire career, Reggie Miller was probably the third best shooting guard from 88 to 2005 behind Jordan and Kobe. Like that would be my thought initially. I don't know if there's anyone else there that you would put.
What years did you?
From 1988 to 2005. So the entirety of Reggie Miller's career. So
2005. Okay.
So I mean that's 7-8 years of Kobe, and that's, you know, a good chunk of time for Jordan as well, obviously. So I would say, now I'm not sure necessarily he was ever the second or third best point guard in any of those individual seasons, but overall that's kind of where I would put him mentally in my tier. You know, there could be other guys. You know, Mitch Richmond obviously played during that time. And you know, there are other, the other very good shooting guards. So most of them, you know, had a few good seasons and didn't necessarily have didn't have the longevity that Miller had. I mean, that he had very unusually great longevity, and Allen has too. For Allen's career, do you think he is like in that level of conversation? Because I feel like he's behind. He's obviously behind Kobe. You know, depending on where you put Pierce, because Pierce did both shooting guard and small forward. So I'm not sure if you...
Yeah, I wouldn't really count him
in
that same...
Okay, I don't know, but...
At least I don't count him in that
Which is fine. I mean, Carter McGrady, you know, they're both have kind of the same shooting guard, small forward thing too. So, I mean, Allen was more of a pure shooting guard. So that's kind of a difference as well. I don't know. It's tough. I don't know. I'm not sure there's any more point to that, but you know, I just kind of feel like I think of Miller higher between him and his contemporaries than I do of Allen, who I think is very close. But I just, for whatever reason, Miller just still won't stay above in my head than Allen has. Maybe just maybe I've watched a documentary or two too much of Miller, and it's made me overrate him. But I just kind of feel that way about him mentally, even though, you know,
and he's one of my favorite players of all time. Actually.
Yeah, right.
That's another thing too. Even though I live in Chicago, I still I got the scorn of many of my friends.
Weird, yeah.
I really enjoyed Reggie Miller. Sure. You know, sometimes I didn't really like, you know, and I've mentioned it before, and you probably can tell I don't really like Michael Jordan. So anytime anybody act like a dickhead to Michael Jordan, and you know, and which again is you can't do that. You can't show up Michael in any games. And that's, you know, even as a kid, I was like, this guy's kind of a dickhead and everybody loves him. And then like anytime anybody acts like even slightly mean to him, everyone goes crazy and, oh, you can't do this and you can't shove off and you can't, you know, stick your tongue out or dance around every time you shoot. So I was like, no, screw it. So I like, yeah, Karl Malone and Reggie Miller are two of my favorite all-time favorites. So
yeah,
I don't like Michael Jordan. So that's
He's
kind of a jerk. I don't like jerks, you know. And Reggie Miller is a jerk too, don't get me wrong, but you know,
He's a less threatening jerk because he never won a championship. So.
Exactly. He's not an all-time jerk, and right. Jordan is.
Yeah, so much less six. So
he brought much success to my team, but, you know, I was also too young, too, to really appreciate it all that
there
much.
There you go,
but
yeah.
Even then, Jordan's not my guy that I mean, of course, I'm not arguing that he's an all-time great player. That's just not the type of people that I enjoy. Like, the foaming at the mouth to destroy your opponent thing isn't something that I really like. It's not admirable to me. Like, I don't really enjoy that.
So the marketing didn't work for you then. The marketing didn't work for you then.
No. Yeah. Oh God. Yeah. of course. Yeah. When I was like 8, it did, and then when I got older, I was like, wait.
There you go. You became cynical at some point. So
I read the Jordan rules when I was like 11, and I was like, this guy's kind of a jerk.
This guy's mean. I don't understand.
Because I really like Sam Smith.
Yeah.
Like, Sam Smith is my guy. I used to read him all the time in the Tribune because my dad would always get the Chicago Tribune. And then I was like, my dad, once he went to the library and I was like, oh, here's like Sam Smith wrote a book about Michael Jordan. It's going to be great. And I was just like, oh, this guy's icky. Like, I don't like this guy anymore.
There you go.
You know, so that's it. So that's why I do like Reggie Miller. So maybe I've convinced myself just because of my personal bias that I should get Reggie Miller in there.
Okay.
But we'll highlight him. We'll talk.
He's on the, it's still possible for me. So, all right, next is Paul Pierce, 24th all-time in win shares, 62nd in win shares per 48, 40th in box score plus minus, 22nd in value of replacement player. You know, he has a really good case, kind of similar to Reggie Miller, in where, like, he has a great case because of the longevity. And also has like these clutch playoff moments and these, you know, these just these great, like, memorable things, and had that swagger and had that thing. He has the championship as well, and some you know, some finals teams, some really elite teams. You know, the Pacers weren't quite at that level. Pretty much, they made one finals, obviously. But Pierce, like, the absolute peak years for Pierce, I don't think were quite as elite as, like, especially McGrady. But the longevity, I think, outweighs him enough where, you know, we're not considering McGrady. We are considering Pierce. I have him as maybe, you have him as yes.
Yeah, I just think there's just a lot there. We talked about him on a recent show. You know, fifth amongst his era in win shares, 19th in win shares per 48, fifth in value replacement player, arguably one of the best, you know, shooting guard small forwards ever. You know, a huge reputation for hitting big shots, you know, in key moments. You know, great longevity, as you mentioned. It's still going, to be honest, and he's still, you know, at least a somewhat valuable player. Advanced metrics love him, you know. 24th all-time in win shares, you know, 40th all-time in box score plus minus, 22nd all-time in value replacement player. I mean, just a super gaudy, you know, resume there. And it's tough for me to make a case that he doesn't belong. And you know, there's going to be guys we're going to talk about that have, you know, equal or even, you know, close cases. But to me, Pierce just has a lot of stuff that would tick my box in terms of, you know, someone I would put in here. You know, the peak, as you said, it isn't, you know, there as much as it is for some guys. But, man, the longevity and what he was able to do for, you know, how long he was able to do it and how consistent he's been over those years, that's something I value a lot. So, for me, he was a no-doubter for me when I was making my list. So, you know, we'll see. But, yeah, to me, I really, really, really enjoyed his resume and really think he deserves to be in there.
Yeah, he is I'm leaning yes for him. I'm not absolutely there yet. But, I'm becoming convinced. We'll see how it goes, but he's up there for me in terms of, you know, where we're at with these guys. So next we have Adrian Dantley. Rates really well, as we talked about in our show, in all the advanced stats. Was not part of the initial top 50 list. Had seven seasons where he was in the top 10 win shares per 48, including number one in 84. Five times a top 10 in value replacement player. It didn't really have a lot of appearances on the All-NBA teams, two times on the second team. So, you know, really the case is on the advanced metrics. He, you know, was kind of regarded as not the best guy to play with ever. Not a guy who necessarily shared the ball or made his teammates better. Fair or unfair, that's kind of the reputation that he has. I have him as maybe, you have him as no. I'm kind of leaning toward just barely on the edges, but probably not. And pretty much all of these guys, of course, are barely on the edge at this point, but yeah, probably not going to quite make it.
And that's where I was with him. And he was a guy who we had Adam Cribbley, I believe, discuss it. And he was a guy who, you know, as we were doing the podcast, going, oh, man, he's got a good resume. And then he looked, and it's just he was really tough. He was one of the final guys that I was sort of wavering on because there's a lot there to really like. I think there's just guys that we're going to talk about, you know, coming up or guys we have talked about. I think that just had, you know, just better all around resumes. I mean, Dantley has a lot of good stuff and a lot of stuff you should like, but the stuff about, you know, the teammates just like outwardly, you know, not liking him in terms of like, you know, stuff of teams thinking they played better without him, you know, teammates thinking that as well. You know, sort of his reputation for being sort of a, you know, for better or for worse, a ball hog and a guy who, you know, took up a lot of possessions and really kind of worried about his stuff versus, you know, the team in general. But there's a lot to like though as well. So he's one that I put no here, but I leaned yes at times. But I just think other guys just have resumes, and we'll talk about them here in a little bit. So I had to go no initially, but he's more of a victim of just not having enough space, because I think he's a guy who's a worthy candidate, but just, you know, when you only can do 50, you know, there's going to be guys that are going to be tough, you know, outs, and he's one of them for sure.
Yeah, and if he had been on the original list, yeah, that might have been enough for me to be like okay, he should be on this list. And it's just like,
yeah, because then you know a little bit more of his peers, you know, then right. You know the reputation of his peer. But the fact that he's one of these glaring guys that you look at and you go, oh geez, you know, why is he not in the normal list? And you read all the quotes like, yeah, guy was an asshole, he never passed the ball. Yeah. You know, you're like, oh geez, he really wasn't liked by his peer, and didn't seem like an outwardly like bad dude.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, so that's where I kind of looked at it a lot too, is like, you know, you read stuff about him and they talk about him being, you know, a relatively good guy. I mean, people seem to outwardly get along with him, but that he just, you know, on the basketball court, they just really hated playing with him. Like, and to me that hurts a lot. I would rather you just think he's a big jerk than, you know, but still enjoy playing with him because at least you know you're going to win, get success or win games with him. It seems to be the other way with Dantley, where people sort of respect, the human Dantley, but then on the court they're like, I don't know, he kind of, wish he would have just passed. So he's a weird one for me, but yeah, he's just on the outs for me, unfortunately. But yeah, he's a victim of just only having, if we did top 75, he'd be a no doubter.
Oh,
for
yeah,
me.
Yeah. But for 7 years in Utah, he averaged a 29.6. 6.2 rebounds, 3.2 assists. not too bad.
It's gaudy stuff. No, it's good stuff there.
Yeah, he really was a pretty great player. I mean, yeah, that's like, that's not that far from like McGrady peak.
Right.
He was like kind of, maybe didn't do everything that McGrady did, but he was like, production wise, that's not that far off. So, but yeah, I'm going to go ahead and agree that he's not going to be on here. So we'll go ahead and take him off. Dennis Rodman. I have him as maybe, you have him as yes. I think your argument is that during the show in which you discussed him was that he is the best rebounder ever. And if you're the best at something that's so important, then, you put him in, which, I have sympathy for. And, we looked at that, at the Skeptical Sports Benjamin Watson piece, their long series that he wrote about Rodman and how valuable he was and how much he seemed to help his teams win and how much of a difference he really made when he was on the court and when with teams for before and after he got there. I mean, it was the Pistons, I guess, to an extent with the Spurs and of course with the Bulls, some of the greatest teams ever. So I think he's terrific. I think there are kind of the traditional advanced stats don't love him that much, but and obviously the lack of scoring. I mean, he would be by far the lowest level scorer of anybody on this list. I mean, he averaged in the single digits. I mean, 7.3 points for his career. So so that I would obviously be low, but I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, as I mentioned on the podcast, when you talk about one of the guys who's, easily the best rebounder ever. I think we could pretty safely say that, or at least, in the conversation of being, top three or top two. I mean, you could say, you could be, a Moses Malone or guys like that. I think, by and large, I would probably put him as the best ever. But, going with that of saying, okay, he is the best rebounder ever. And just, I think a stellar defender too. I mean, one of the best defenders ever too. And those are two, important pillars of the game. And it's hard for me to say that a guy who was the best at one, important pillar and maybe one of the best at another pillar, wouldn't be on this list. I mean, for me, that's real tough to do. Like a guy like Rodman, I got to put on. And you talk again about the success his teams had around him. And that's, I'm not going to attribute that all to him, but I think he's a key cog in all those things. I think he makes a lot of those things go. Less so for the Pistons, but I think the Bulls, I don't think that team is what they are. And I don't think they're one of the best teams ever, like we're saying, without a guy like Rodman there just, unselfishly doing whatever he could to get a rebound, to defend, defend anybody. I mean, he could defend a point guard, a center. It didn't matter. I mean, you couldn't do a pick and roll with him because it wouldn't, I mean, he would just, he would stifle it immediately. And it was so, so insane of what he could do on the defensive end, what he could do on the rebounding end. And yeah, he's just a guy it's hard for me to take a guy who's just so good at two important pillars of the game and to not put him on that list. I have trouble doing it. So.
Yeah, I think it's a good argument. There are some of the other players, that I would kind of put ahead of him. Maybe are obviously just do a lot on both sides of the ball, but I can see him being in my final choices. It's close. It's definitely something that he's he might be in there. We'll have to see. He might be in there. So. Next, we have Elvin Hayes, who I have as maybe, you have as no. The advanced stats do not like him very much. I mean, 44th all time in win shares, but because he had a longevity, played exactly 5,000 minutes, one of my favorite stats. He's not in the top 250 win shares for 48. He is 229th in box score plus minus, 151st in value replacement player. Now, the thing about that is that he that misses the first 5 years of his career, which were probably the most productive or among the most productive years of his career. So
right.
He might be better if we incorporate that and includes like the last 4 years of his career when he was objectively not very good. I think the last two, those kind of come with a grain of salt a little bit. So he's very weak in those advanced stats, and he was another guy kind of like Dantley. Well, I think he was a guy people didn't care much for playing with, and they didn't like him as a person that much either. I mean, right. But he averaged 24 and 14 for a decade.
Yeah, it's body stuff.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, he rebounded like a madman. I mean, 18.1 in 74, leading the league, led the league a couple times. It went down once he went to Washington and started playing with Unsell, but he was still a double digit rebounder until, you know, age 34, in 1980. Yeah. So, now, you know, some of that obviously came at the expense maybe of, you know, doing some of the other things. And most of his best years, came against a league that had been weakened by, you know, expansion and by there being the ABA. So there's, you know, the pool of players is different. I think that's something we haven't really talked about extensively, but I think does something that has to be kind of thought about at least a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. And to a point, yeah, I think we do have to talk about it. But I'm not going to punish the guy either. It's really not his fault. You know what I mean? Like, so it's tough in that respect where you sort of have to look at, hey, you know, there's different context to, you know, his peak or these few years that he had. But, you know, it's not necessarily his fault, but it's coincidence. So, what do you do? Yeah, it's an interesting case for sure. He's one that, you know, I really like a lot of the stuff he did in the numbers, like you said, the 24 and 14, a lot of the gaudy rebounding numbers, like all that stuff sort of there. But you look at a guy who, you know, of his peers, you know, he stands out in some ways, but other ways, you know, not really. I mean, 81st amongst his peers in true shooting percentage, you know, 75th in field goal percentage, and then 40th in win shares per 48, which is another indication that just, you know, he had a lot of the raw gaudy numbers and that sort of stuff. But when you look at, you know, efficiency stuff, when you look at sort of advanced metrics, they just do not like him whatsoever. And you know, his peers didn't like him as well. That's another one where it's kind of interesting. It's like, well, geez, that's kind of, you would at least like your teammates to enjoy playing with you. But he's an interesting case. You know, I lean no, and I think I'm fairly confident in no. Just, you know, not like I think he's a fun player. I enjoy watching him play. I enjoyed when we watch his game tape. I enjoy a lot about him. But yeah, he's a guy that I think he's just kind of on the outside looking in when you just have to pick 50 guys. And I think there's some guys that just have better cases than him. So
yeah. Do you know what the least number of games he played in a season was?
81.
80.
Oh, that must have been a bad year. He's like, I'm ready. I'm good. They're like, no, you're not.
Yeah.
I wonder what it was. Do we have any clue what his ailment was? Like, he had to be just like,
what caused him to miss two games in 76. Yeah.
Yeah. It's gotta be like decapitated or like, you know, something like similar. You know?
Yeah. It's,
it could just be like a sore ankle. Like, and it had to be like a legit, like, yeah, I wonder. Cause like, it couldn't be like a big knee injury. Cause he's obviously, you know, okay.
Yeah.
Later, I don't know. Do we know if it was at the end of the year or what time of the year it was?
I don't know.
We need to get the Elvin Hayes. We'll call into our Elvin Hayes expert
sure,
right now.
And exactly. Can, yes.
Chime in.
The rankings among peers, are those among forwards and centers or just centers? Do you remember?
I think that's forward and centers, okay. But yeah,
I think that would be different if you just looked at centers, which I don't know if that's fair or not, but. Because I think of more of as a center who kind of played out of position, although, you know, I guess they're not, it's not out of position, but just, you know, sort of,
sure.
I mean, he was 6'9", 235, which is, you know, for his time was fine size-wise. But I don't know. I see where you're going. I mean, I think he's probably going to be behind enough guys where I'm going to have to leave him out. But I'm not going to feel great about it. I'll put it that way.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
Yeah. So, next is Dave Cowens, who I have as maybe, you have as no. He has an MVP, otherwise we talked about maybe not the best MVP award ever given. 118th in win shares, 136th in win shares per 48, 51st in box score plus minus, 121st in value of replacement player. Another guy where the last two miss a decent chunk of his career when he may have been at his best, so he might rank better among those had it counted, you know, earlier, but it didn't come until 74. So. But he managed to have three top 10 win share seasons, three top 10 seasons in box for plus minus and value replacement player. And I'm definitely confident he would have had more of those.
Oh, certainly. Yeah.
Had, you know, that counted a couple years earlier. So, I mean, really known for his strong defense and rebounding despite his lack of size and leading some really good Celtics teams, including two championships in the mid 70s. So, again, you know, there's just so many big men that we're, you know, going to be considering from here where he's probably going to be behind them. But he also known just for being a guy who was just all over the floor and just like gave like extra incredible hustle that was like, you know, beyond almost, you know, almost superhuman as far as the effort that he gave.
Yeah, and Collins is a guy who I like his resume a lot, and he's just a guy, I think you sort of mentioned a little bit, there's just a lot of other big men, and there's, you know, a few guys we're going to talk about here pretty soon that I kind of put over him, and he's just a victim of just so many players on here, and especially so many big men that you sort of compare him to a lot of the guys we're looking at, and he's a tough one to leave off, but I couldn't put him on. Just there's just too many other guys that I think had better cases that we'll talk about here in a little bit, but definitely a good case and definitely a guy who deserves, you know, at least inclusion in this, you know, discussion here, because he's a guy who probably doesn't get, maybe doesn't get enough credit for what he really did and how good he was. But yeah, for me, I unfortunately have to leave him off the list.
Yeah. So next is Willis Reed, who I had him as yes, then I switched to maybe, and I don't feel good about this at all. You have him as no. He won an MVP, one All-NBA first team, four second team, and one time on the All-Defensive first team. You know, the thing for him is he had five great seasons. He's obviously one of the best remembered players of his time, great rebounding, defense, and leadership, and averaged 21 and 14 for his peak. But his peak is relatively short. He was, you know, battered by injuries after that, and you know, didn't have, just longevity wise, he just doesn't have much. So does the lack of longevity, you know, make up for the peak, which is a very, very good peak, but maybe not like an absolute, like, elite, you know, great all-timer type peak.
Yeah. And I think the biggest thing with him, and we discussed it when we you know, briefly talked about him at the beginning of this, is that, you know, he just never led in any stats, like any statistical category. He doesn't show up in like all time lists, you know, amongst his peers. You know, he's, you know, seventh in rebound per game, you know, seventh in win shares per 48. You know, it's fine. It's okay. But I mean, when we're talking about top 50 all time greats, like, I just don't know if he is that. And he's, you know, a very, you know, influential and very significant player for, you know, a lot of what he did. I mean, unfortunately, his biggest influential game, he probably one of his worst games ever, but you know, that's fine. It is what it is. You know, it's a narrative there and all that stuff. But yeah, for me, I just don't know if he has a lot there to go with. I mean, there's good aspects of him for sure. There's, you know, a high peak, but yeah, longevity hurts, and just not being at least, doesn't seem like he's head and shoulders above his peers at any point. That, for me, it's hard to do that then, to say you're a top 50 at any point, because it's just, I just don't know. Yeah, he's a weird one, but I'm pretty safely in the no camp for him.
Okay, yeah. The Bill Simmons rankings had him at 30th, Slam had him at 32nd, and Hoops Critic had him at 36th. So all right, kind of around the same level. Which is interesting. And Curtis Harris, he gave us a list when we were doing sort of with him. He's also on there, you know, as well. He didn't rank his. So, I don't know. I feel bad about not having Willis Reed in my list. I feel like there's
we'll send him a gift basket.
I just kind of feel I'm doing something wrong in basketball history if I don't include him on the list. Like, I intellectually completely get the reasons why we would leave him off. Mm-hmm. I just feel like...
That's tough. Yeah, there's some guys, and that's why I feel like sort of with Iverson as well, and that might be, you know, when I was raised, and, you know, it's just a guy, I feel weird, you know, telling the story of a basketball history through this top 50. Maybe we're overthinking this. I know it's shocking 40 episodes in that we're possibly overthinking this top 50 list, but I don't know. Yeah, he's one I have solidly a no, but I'm with you. He's a weird one to leave off when you're talking about the history of the game, because he's significant.
All right, well, as long as we both feel uncomfortable about it,
I'll send him a gift. Edible arrangements, I'll do it now.
There we go. You do that. Get in Louisiana somewhere. You know, wherever he's standing. So,
yeah, do we have his address?
I'll let you know if I don't want to reveal to our many listeners who might stalking his house if we give it out. So, all right. Next is Pau Gasol, who I have as no, you have as yes. The advanced stats are strong for him. 42nd in win shares, 55th in win shares for 48, 42nd box show plus minus, 30 in value of replacement player. So you want him on here. Make your argument.
Yeah, I think, you know, other things as well. You talk about two All-NBA second teams. Of course, you know, playing in a league with many other great big men at his time, I think that's pretty impressive. Two All-NBA third teams as well that go with it. You know, three times in the top 10 in win shares per 48, three times in the top 10 in value replacement player. You know, the second best player in a key cog on two NBA title teams. I think he was a big part of those Lakers. I think they don't – I'm very confident they don't win those titles without him. you know, being, you know, as significant of a player as he was. And I think it's a little underrated how significant he was for those title teams as well. I mean, obviously Kobe is a fantastic player and those were really good teams, but I think Gasol was just such an important part of those two teams. And I think those are significant teams. Remarkable consistency as well throughout his 15 years. I mean, almost from the moment he jumped into the league, he's been basically this guy and is still this guy as well. I mean, he's probably got a few more years of being a consistently good player. And I think that's impressive as well. Amongst his peers, you know, this is, you know, forward and centers, second in win shares per 48, second in value replacement player, sixth in field goal percentage, fifth in assists per game, assists per 36, which I think is very important. 11th in rebounds per 36, and then sixth in points per 36. So you look at a guy who just all across the board, you know, in terms of points, assists, rebounds, he's there. He's, you know, he's with his peers and running, you know, near the top of them, top five, all that sort of stuff. It's to me, it's significant. And you look at a guy, you can make cases for a few of the guys we're going to talk about here. But when you look at a guy like a Willis Reed, I think he just has more on that resume than I think a Willis Reed does. Sure, he doesn't have, you know, maybe the legend status that Willis Reed has, you know, but is that fair or not? I mean, I think a lot of, you know, I've argued it before. I think a lot of the legend status of Willis Reed is, you know, largely because of where he played. And that's not to say he wasn't a great player, but, you know, if he's doing that in Cincinnati, I don't know if he's coming out, you know, in the game seven in Cincinnati, I don't think that many people, you know, it's that big of a deal. I don't think that many books are written about the, you know, the Cincinnati Royals. They are, you know, about the New York Knicks having a great era. But no, Paul Gasol is a guy who's just, I think there's just a lot there to like. And I think the consistency, I think now you can sort of say the longevity. It's been, you know, 15 years now that he's been, you know, basically this player and been, you know, basically pretty good. And I just think amongst his peers, he's stood out. And I don't think there's many arguments against him, to be honest, instead of just, you know, gaudy stuff or maybe just not being, you know, the top guy on a really successful team. He never was that, but he was the top guy in Memphis for a long time. And, you know, they didn't have great seasons, but I think it was a big part in that team becoming something when they were just absolutely, absolutely nothing. And, you know, once he came there, it took a few years, but they became at least, you know, a team that could, you know, do something, and then became, you know, a playoff team, you know, after he left, and largely because a lot of the pieces they got back for him. But yeah, I he's one that I just think, you know, advanced stats wise is there, consistency wise is there, and I just think amongst his peers he stands out. So, you know, maybe not the flashiest pick of a top 50, but I think a guy who definitely deserves to be up there.
Yeah, I guess if you look at his peak seasons, they are he's never really been the MVP conversation, but you compare him his peak seasons to Willis Reed's peak seasons, and they're, you know, it's not bad. I mean, yep. Reeds were a bit better, but it's not that far off. And Gasol has more really productive seasons. So, you know, yeah, I think you've convinced me that I would put Gasol ahead of Reed. I'm not sure I would definitely put Gasol in still, but I think, okay, now I'm kind of seeing the case for him against Reed. What about against Cowens?
Yeah, that's an interesting one. I would put him over Collins, I think, just because a lot of the statistically, I think I probably would. But yeah, Collins has a good case. I think those two are closer than we might think.
Yeah, Collins didn't have, you know, his career is relatively short as well. You know, I guess Powell's like 5,000 more minutes in his career so far.
Yeah, I really like Powell's consistency. I think people don't really, you know, or our longevity as well. I mean, I think people sort of take for granted this guy. You know, it's been what, since 2001 that he's been in the league, and
right.
And it's still, I mean, pretty much has been consistent all those years, and has been, you know, outside of a few years of the little injuries. I mean, you know, especially that last Lakers year, or the second to last Lakers year rather. Otherwise, I mean, everything's kind of been there for him, and it's. I've really enjoyed his career, and I think it's a significantly career. It's a long career, and I think he's been very good at it, albeit not a superstar at any point. So I guess that's where we sort of can make a case for him, because he never – I don't think anybody ever thought that this guy was a superstar. But then again, you know, is that fair? Because I think, you know, numbers-wise, he's right up there. But yeah, I get it. From in terms of like an influence standpoint and that sort of stuff, I don't think anybody's ever thought of him as like a top five player in the league, or, you know, a superstar, or the key cog in a team that's going to win a title. But – you know, numbers wise, he's put up stuff, and he's been a productive member of teams that have been very, very good. So I don't know. Yeah, he's got a really good resume to me.
Yeah, I'm leaning toward your point of view, but we'll just kind of have to see how the numbers shake out. So next is Bob Lanier, who is another guy with a really strong advanced stats case. And I think him versus the guy who follows him, I think that'll be kind of an interesting comparison. But
yes, yeah.
49th all time in win shares, 48th in win shares or 48, 18th in box score plus minus, which does not include probably the best portion of his career, his first 4 or 5 years. 47th in value of replacement. He had 5 seasons in the top 10 in win shares for 48, and 4 top 10 value of replacement player. Again, he would have probably almost certainly had more had that stat just been available a few years before. And, you know, to me, I think both Gasol and the guy we're talking about afterward, Patrick Ewing, we can kind of go ahead and just kind of maybe go through him a little bit. Those cases are really similar. And we talked about during the linear episode, he and Ewing just seemed to have, like, their games were pretty similar too, or at least their, maybe not their games, but their skills were pretty similar, and their strengths and weaknesses are pretty similar.
Yeah, I think, I guess we can talk about Patrick Ewing, because these were two that when I was sort of going through my list and looking at two guys, and I think you put these two back to back for a reason or whatever, and it was good because I went Lanier and I said, yeah, no, I think Lanier's out. And then I went to, you know, Ewing and I said, yeah, I think Ewing's in. And then I went back and I yeah, actually, I don't know. And then they're very interesting cases. It's almost a toss up between the two for me, because Lanier's a guy who, you know, I think really, really when we did the show for him, I got a better appreciation for him. Ewing as well. I think Ewing also, you know, did probably better than I thought as well. But yeah, they have a really, really similar case, really good case for both of them. I don't know. I guess I don't know. Between those two, where do you lean maybe? Because I put no on Lanier and yes on Ewing, but I, you know, looking at it and, you know, a little bit earlier today, I kind of went back and I went, I don't know. I almost could change on that. They're very, very, very similar, but these two, it's going to be one or the other, I think, for me.
Yeah. So Ewing played, he did play a lot more. I mean, he played 4,000 minutes. Lanier played 32,000 minutes. I mean, that's a decent difference. Lanier obviously struggled with the injuries later on in his career, as we talked about. His teams didn't really win during his prime where Ewing's did. The Knicks obviously made the finals and, you know, almost won a championship. Ewing is 39th all time in win shares and Lanier is 49th, despite that minutes disparity. And you know, the per 48 stuff, Lanier is a lot stronger. So I don't know. I mean, I would probably lean Ewing, but it is so incredibly close. And if you're comparing Lanier and Gasol, I'm not sure, you know, cause I would definitely, I mean, I guess, by process of elimination, if I'm putting Ewing ahead of Gasol, then I guess I would put Lanier ahead of Gasol. But I don't know. I mean, it's tough for those three cases are all sort of difficult for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think Ewing has a great resume. I think maybe an underrated resume as well, probably because of the era he played in and sort of, you know, the success that you know, a lot of guys around him.
Yeah, he's behind, you know, he's like fourth on that list of like big men of like when he played, or fourth or fifth or whatever.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
He's behind Olajuwon, behind David Robinson, and behind Jack.
Right, yeah, and those guys too, you know, it's tough because you look at these like legendary, no doubt, all-time great, you know, big men or whatever, and then you look at Ewing who probably, you know, could make a reasonable case for being in that same class. I think he's, you know, obviously a little step below those guys, but you know, 5 times in the top 10 in win shares, 6 times in the top 10 in PER, you know, 1 time in the top of, you know, box score plus minus, you know, 3 times in the top 10, you know, value replacement player, just a really, really good all around player that probably I mean, the rebounding is a little, I mean, he's a guy who you would assume is, you know, an all-time legendary rebounder. Then you look at some numbers, you know, you look at rebound percentage and that sort of stuff, and he just doesn't grade out all that well. Field goal percentage isn't quite there either in terms of that stuff. Some of the, you know, efficiency field goal stuff isn't quite there. But yeah, I mean, in terms of raw stats, he's there. But Lanier, I mean, yeah, he's got a good case other than, you know, not, it doesn't have a whole ton of like all NBA and all defensive recognition.
Yeah, he didn't have any of that.
Yes,
that's a weird.
I guess
that was,
you know, which is very, very odd because you look at Ewing, who's a guy who I would assume would get kind of passed up by a lot of the guys, but then you look and, you know, he's 1 time on the all NBA first team, you know, 6 times, which is impressive as hell, on the all NBA second team, and then 3 times in the all defensive second team. So you look at, you know, Ewing as a guy who I would sort of assume would get passed up by his peers more, but he shows up in more of those all time lists, where Lanier is a guy who I think sort of stood a little bit over his peers in some ways, but then doesn't get those, you know, a lot of that hardware that we talk about. So it's a very interesting one. I mean, perception wise, I don't know. I think perception wise, you kind of go with a Ewing, but when you really, really get down to it, I mean, Lanier's got a very, very, very good case.
Yeah, yeah.
Solve anything. So I'm leaving it up to you.
All right.
Make this for me.
All right. So, okay. So we've decided that Kuzi and Isaiah are in, correct?
Yes. Okay. I will knock Allen Iverson out and put Isaiah in, I believe.
Oh, okay. Okay. So are you putting Ray Allen ahead of Iverson?
Oh God, I should probably look at my list a little bit more here. And see, oh boy, okay. Let's. Man, I don't know if I'm ready to do this right.
I mean, we can table it. We don't. We're not required to absolutely have our finals.
Yeah, let's wait. Let me think on it a little bit. Okay. I think I have my list, but I don't want to like think as I'm talking here on this podcast.
That's fair. We don't need to do that.
That wouldn't be very entertaining. Okay. I take a while to come to a final decision on this sort of stuff. Like. I do the same thing at the grocery store. Like cereal takes me 20 minutes
there
to figure out.
Well, remind me never to shop.
No, don't with me. I'm just always like, I don't know. Like, and then I see a sale and I'm like, oh, but it's not good.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, that's fair. So we'll reveal the 7 of the 15 that we've chosen here, as well as the other 43 players in our next episode. That'll be the finale of our top 50 series. So it's been quite a ride, Rich. I've enjoyed it. Thank you for putting so much work into this, and it's been a lot of fun and a lot of work. I'm looking forward to getting back to a little bit of a less intensive schedule as the NBA season begins. We can just sort of enjoy basketball. We'll do our show, but it won't necessarily. It'll be nice to not have it so be focused for a while, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. And you said hard work on my end. And I really think, and people don't probably know the back end work that has gone through this. You have done way more than me in terms of collecting this stuff, getting guests, you know, doing a lot of the data, do a lot of the back end stuff, you know, getting the notes together. I've had just an insanely busy summer and I haven't had the chance to devote, nearly as much as you have. So I think, you said I did a lot of hard work. I basically don't think I did anything compared to what you did for this project. So, no, it's definitely, I mean, for people that don't know, I mean, Jason has really put this project, you know, like Isaiah Thomas on his back, and is more efficiently delivering here. But it's you did a ton of work here, so no, it's definitely a testament to your work more so than mine. I mean, I've kind of just been along for the ride, and I've enjoyed the hell out of it, but no, you've done a lot of the heavy lifting here. So for people that don't know, I mean, a lot of it has been on you. So I do think you deserve a lot of the credit for basically what we did here. And it's a great series. I think it's a lot. It's I think what we're going to kind of consider something that put us on the map. I think a lot of people, I could just tell from the interactions we have on Twitter in terms of people, the followers we have, people talking. I think a lot of people have sort of discovered us through this process, and that's good. And that's one of the things we kind of wanted to accomplish with this project. So I'm happy to see that. And no, but definitely a lot of credit has to go to you.
Well, thank you, Richard. You've done quite a bit as well. But I appreciate that you appreciate my efforts. And I hope the listeners appreciate that whether they agree with our conclusion or have, necessarily agree with all of our thought process, I hope they appreciate that, we've been trying to think of these ideas and kind of consider these ideas of what's important and what's valuable, because all these things are so nebulous in basketball. It's just so hard to make these decisions. I knew that going in, but I have extra appreciation for how difficult it is now. So I hope that they at least appreciate that we're coming from on it, and that we've just had a lot of fun talking about past players, and that the top 50 itself is, it's a fine destination, but it's more been about the journey than the destination. So so we'll be back with that very soon. Actually, if there's any feedback that anyone wants to, we're going to put a little bit of space between this show and the final episode. So if anyone wants to get in touch with us, they can either go to overandbacknba.com and register for our forums, where we're having discussion on all these players. We'll have a thread just for, final thoughts, where you can kind of give some feedback. It'll be in a prominent place where you'll be able to find it there also at harborprocessing.com, on the show post, on Twitter or Facebook at Over and Back NBA. And also, in addition to that, you can find both our show and all the great shows on the Hardwood Paroxysm Network on iTunes. We'd appreciate a rating and review, especially if you've loved the Top 50 series. We'd love that. Helps people learn more about the show and be able to find us more easily, and spreads the word. So if you're if you've been into this and you've you know, if you've liked what we've done, you know, a small way you can pay us back, quote unquote, would be to leave a review on iTunes.
Yes,
I greatly appreciate that. So Rich, anything else?
I think that's it.
All right, guys, well, thanks a lot, and until next time, we'll see you later.